This is At the Line Post Draft. We just spent almost 4 hours streaming tonight, guys. And yep. I am joined by Noah and Nick, who were on the stream with us. If you didn't know that we were streaming, you can go check it out at twitch.tv/TheTyJaeger. That's twitch.tv/TheTyJaeger. We're doing a lot of streaming there, and kind of a makeshift podcast, as you would say. But so first off, we went through draft night, no trades. The hype that we all saw kind of died down, but I think there's some legitimate reasons to that, which we'll talk about. But let's first talk about the two picks that the San Antonio Spurs selected. With the 11th overall pick, the San Antonio Spurs select Devin Vassell from Florida State. And this was, I think, was a great pick by the Spurs. Noah, what do you think about this pick?
I'm absolutely ecstatic about this pick. You know, if you were watching the stream, then you saw me say something along the lines of he was my, you know, fourth or fifth rated prospect on the board, and they got him all the way at 11, so already an incredible value. And the Spurs were sorely lacking in defense, especially in the perimeter defense department and even in the team defense department. And he is, to me, the best team defender in this draft, an incredible perimeter defender who can guard 1, 2, 3. And if he maybe adds a little bit of muscle, maybe 4, I just don't think he can be upset. And the Spurs didn't shoot a lot of threes, even though they shot a good percentage. But this kid is a really good three-point shooter. And he's going to be someone who, in my opinion, should be able to come right away, plug and play from day one. And we know that he likes tacos and that he hasn't been to San Antonio, but he's ready to do anything, you know, to win. So I'm excited to see him come to the team.
Surprising fact I read is that not that he likes tacos, he has never had a breakfast taco.
Oh, he's never had a breakfast taco. Well, yeah. We got to get some in him. He's exactly. In San Antonio now, so you got to get some breakfast tacos.
Well, yeah. And a quote that Jeff Garcia shared with us, he's excited to help to join Pop with the social justice speaking out and as well as breakfast tacos.
You know, I like... That's a weirdly underrated aspect of him, that he will fit in very well with the Spurs. It seems like, especially Lonnie during the riots, the BLM movement, you know, going on.
Yeah.
He was in downtown San Antonio handing out water, you know, helping clean it up, but also kind of help spread the message. DeJounte's always on Instagram somewhere doing something. So, you know,
yeah.
DeMar's always incredibly outspoken, especially about Compton and everything going on there. So I feel like if he sticks true to his word right there, he's going to find quite a bit in common with his future teammates.
Definitely. I think even though, you know, Jeff said he hadn't met these guys, I think he's going to fit in pretty seamlessly. And if anything, I know everybody's saying, oh, well, we have a ton of guards. Well, think of it this way. There are initiators, there's wings, and there's bigs. He's a wing. He's a defensive-minded wing who can shoot threes, so 3 and D, something that every team could use. And he's young. He's still got, you know, plenty of years ahead of him to be developed into something maybe better than he already is right now. So I think Spurs fans should be extremely, extremely excited about Devin Vassell joining the Spurs. And at the end of the day, you know, yes, maybe the Spurs have too many guards, but that's only good for competition. You have a lot of really talented young guys pushing each other to be better. Who's going to earn those minutes? Who's going to be the person in at the end of the game? You know, that is some good competition for me.
I don't even consider him really a guard. I consider him more of a forward with his size compared to the rest of the players and where he's most likely going to play with this team, mostly at three. But looking at the draft board early on, Patrick Williams went really early at number 4 to the Bulls.
He did.
Isaac Okoro went 5 to the Cavs. Kongwu went 6 to Atlanta. So 3 back-to-back guys where Spurs were kind of high on them, just kind of went off the board really easy, really quick.
Yeah.
And then Danny was on the board, but he went 9th to the Wizards. But then I think the surprising pick for me was Jalen Smith going to the Suns at 10, leaving Vassell right there for the Spurs to take.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty surprised that the Suns didn't go after Devin Vassell. I was looking at their social media, and they had a few guys that were like, who are the Suns going to take tonight? You know, from their official Suns social media account. And Devin Vassell was one of those, like, poster boys of, like, the five or six guys that it looked like they may have been considering. And then he seems like a good fit. Like, they could always use more three-point shooters. I know they already have Mikal Bridges over there. On the Suns, and he's very similar, but I don't think you can ever have too many 3 and D wings. And you know, good for them taking another reach. Like last year they reached a little bit for Cam Johnson, and this year they reached for remind me of his name, I'm blanking, Jalen Smith. Right? They reached for Jalen Smith. Yeah. So and they, like Ty said, they left Devin Vassell right for the Spurs to take, and I think that's the best thing that happened all night for the Spurs. That was really great, and it was kind of lucky, and it just the cards fell the right way for them there.
It's, let's talk real quick, because I know there was a lot of trade hype going into this, and but less than an hour before the draft happens, we learned that Klay Thompson essentially has a, we assume, Achilles tear.
Yeah.
Which I think that affected more than anything than everyone really expected.
I think that not only affected our possible trade talks, but it knocked down dominoes for other teams, because basically the Warriors trading their pick to either Chicago or us, and the shift in the players that we see, a lot of teams look at that, and it seems like even some teams would prepare for that. And when you see a huge domino like that fall, it just sets off these trade situations where it's like, eh, we're not really sure anymore. You know, teams get tentative, and the whole landscape of the draft changes because you go from what you think maybe your rival's going to be picking to now, oh, well, they have to pick here because they're down a cornerstone player. So it's, I just feel like that was a huge push for not only our trade aspirations with Golden State, but other teams trading with each other.
I think trade throughout the whole lottery, because we saw, I can't guess, 6, 7, 8. I think almost all the lottery teams were looking at trading in some sort of fashion.
Especially Minnesota.
Yeah, and so Minnesota stayed put with Anthony Edwards. Golden State was hearing a lot between. They stayed put because Klay Thompson is now hurt, and they kind of just had to go with James Wiseman. I think the Hornets were going to stay where they were. But you heard a lot of trade talks throughout before this and a lot of buzz. But then, again, you get a Klay Thompson injury that I think derails almost everything and all the plans going around.
Yeah, because what? The Warriors were actually linked to talking to us, Chicago, Boston, and maybe one or two other teams. But they were just in talks with so many different people. And that kills at least three trade scenarios right there for, like, possibly like shifting the makeup of certain divisions in the NBA. You know, with a team getting a second, like the second overall pick, it shook a lot of stuff up that we didn't really see coming.
Sure. And I think one thing that's really important to remember, and something that, you know, Keith Smith talked to me when he was on my YouTube channel, is like, trades are really unlikely in the first place. Like, they're probably not going to happen. We hear a million hypotheticals, a million rumors, and then most of the time trades don't really end up happening in the volume that a lot of people are hoping for. Yeah. And fans cannot be upset at the Spurs for not trading, right? Because we saw very few trades made throughout the night. And like y'all mentioned, I think the Klay injury probably set a few things in motion in the opposite way of what we wanted to happen. So, you know, no trades happened. Is that a little bit, you know, disappointing? Yes, but it was always going to be kind of hard to move LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan. And you know what? The trades that are potentially on the table don't necessarily have to be over. You know, they could still happen. There's a long off season ahead of us, or I guess a short one ahead of us.
We were talking about beforehand that we could see a lot of those picks. Some of these lottery teams may have been picking for other teams, and they were just saying, hey, we don't really have the facilities to organize these trades right now because there was a short turnaround between the moratorium and the draft. You know, it only happened, 2 days after it was lifted? So we could see some of these trades happen. It just may not be within the 48-hour window that they were allowed to start doing them. So, you know, trades, they can be a week, two-week, three-week-long process. I mean, even for us, like, you know, we're talking bigger assets and like the first overall pick, but like, you know, in the Kawhi trade, that took forever. You know, these big blockbuster trades, which the first, second, third overall picks, those are blockbuster trades. A lot of people don't realize that. You're not pick swapping. You're trading cornerstone players to another team for what you think would become your cornerstone players. So it gets really sticky. There's a lot of intangibles to it that us as non-GMs and non-head coaches and non-owners don't realize.
Yeah, we don't give the people in the front office across the NBA enough credit.
Exactly.
Like, obviously, we can be really critical of them, but at the end of the day, we don't really know what goes into it all, and it's not as easy. Like, anybody from the outside can be like, oh, they're doing a terrible job. They're not even calling. They're not even picking up the phone. They don't even care to make a move. Well, I'm sure that's not true. It's not like they're telling everybody all the time, every single phone call they make, every single text they send out, every single DM they ever get from another, you know, owner or, you know, front office personnel person. So it's just, at the end of the day, we don't know what goes into it, and it's much harder to get deals done than it appears on the outside.
And you can look at our own draft. Woj and Shams were not able to break our, you know, we kept it until the last second who we were picking. And not only that, We didn't even know that we worked out Vassell. We found out in the post-draft interview. Like, you know, some teams are like super adamant about telling, you know, like, oh, Charlotte's really interested in Westbrook, you know. All these teams are ready to trade. The Spurs, we never really know. And the fact that so many people broke it, that we were looking to make big moves, makes me think that we were looking to make big moves. And, you know, Wright was out here trying to do his best. But everything's kind of shifted.
And again, it wasn't just Wright that wasn't able to make a trade. It was almost every team in the lottery that wasn't able to make a trade.
Yeah.
You did see some trades tonight, but they weren't big. You just saw you saw Seth Curry go to the Philadelphia for Josh Richardson and a pick. You saw a lot of pick swaps. You didn't see a lot of player movement.
Exactly. I think the first trade started with Minnesota getting the 17th pick. Was that it? To get Poku? Whoever got Poku?
It was Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City. So that was the first, I think, real trade. And it was mainly just a pick swap with maybe a player, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough, Josh Richardson just tweeted out whenever he got traded, he just tweeted, uh-oh, which is kind of funny. Like, no, it's just, uh-oh, and that's it.
Okay. Let's go back to Vassell.
Okay.
I think he, like you guys said, I think this is a great pick in terms of drafting at a need. Yeah, you really wanted the Spurs to trade up. You really want to give a guy like a Konkwu, maybe even Denny. But to have Vassell fall to you at 11, at a guy that was projected to go just a little bit earlier.
Exactly.
I think it was a great pick at that spot. Exactly. It fills a need that the Spurs desperately need in terms of defensive wings. Mm-hmm. And this is a guy that's, people call him a shooting guard, but this is a guy that's like 6'7 with almost a 6'10 wingspan.
Yes.
And he's probably one, you know, you said that he's one, probably one of the best defenders in this draft, at least team defenders.
I think he's the best team defender in this draft. And as far as individual defenders goes, or is his like defensive versatility in terms of being able to switch, I think he can guard people who are between traditionally point guard sized, maybe all the way to smaller power forwards. I just think he doesn't necessarily have the muscle to hang around with bigger guys. But, you know, 1-3 is a really, really good, you know, defensive skill set. And like you said, he's not really a guard. But again, like, I see players more as wings, creators, and bigs. And if you're guarding wings and creators, I think those are the two most important positions that are, you know, archetypes that make teams run. So,
exactly.
You know, if that's who he's guarding every night and he's doing it at a high level, I don't think you can be upset with this pick at all.
Exactly. Because you look at the top players in the league, right? If you take out the top active players, three of them are center power forwards. You know, you got Jokic, Embiid, AD. I'm sure I'm missing someone there, but if you look at what people consider the best players, you look at LeBron, Kawhi, KD, oh, of course Giannis is out there. All these guys are that wing position. None of them are really bigs. You wouldn't necessarily call
them
big
creators. They're supersized creators. And I think like the NBA runs on big supersized creators, like guys like Luka or Jokic, or even like a Jimmy Butler or LeBron. Like, those guys are what run a team, but like the wings that surround them, and even the secondary, tertiary creators, you know, those are guys who are still important too.
Yeah, and if you're able to guard the general archetype of what most of the best players in the league fall into, that's a really valuable for a team, and especially at the high level that Vassell has shown to do it. So there's a lot to look forward to, especially when we were ranging from crap to fairly poor for most of the season on defense. I think it is a huge upgrade to whatever we had, and this frees up breathing room to where we are actually able to get rid of the two banes of our existence, right? We can get rid of Marco and Bryn, and especially with us drafting, even though I'd say, you know, Vassell's more of a tweener, we drafted two guards tonight, and we drafted a point guard and a shooting guard. What are we trying to get rid of? A 6'3" point guard and a 6'5", 6'6", I don't know what, Bellinelli is shooting guard. We are replacing them. This is exactly what we wanted. This is what Spurs fans, you know, whether you're a homer, whatever you want, this is what all of us clamored for, and we should all be really happy that we're seeing it unfold.
Definitely. And so, you know, you have these new guys coming in, but it also means that shipping out Bryn and shipping out Marco, that's minutes. That's minutes for Keldon.
That's minutes
for Lonnie. That's minutes for Derek and DeJounte.
Exactly. Minutes for Derek and DeJounte at the same time.
It's minutes for all four of those guys that you guys are really, that fans are loving and are high on. Exactly. And I think that gives them the opportunity that they desperately need. Even if you have DeRozan and LaMarcus still on this rotation roster, you're still going to see more minutes for these young guys because you're getting rid of guys within their positions at the least.
Okay, so we have word from Brian Wright. Vassell has been on the team's radar for the last two seasons. They've been looking at him. So that's good to know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And y'all were talking about Devin Dotson. He is signing with the Bulls.
I saw that. Yeah, Devon Dotson signed with the Bulls. He said he idolized Derrick Rose growing up, which is crazy because he's like, obviously Derrick Rose isn't that old, but like Devon Dotson is like young enough to have been a kid yeah. when he was watching him. So that's really cool for him.
And
really,
so
really solid.
We are recording this episode literally right after the draft, so we are kind of getting news of undrafted free agents.
Yes,
I'm hoping. I'm not certain, so don't take this seriously. But I'm going to hopefully we get Jeff G for a segment about Brian Wright's interview post draft.
That'd be nice.
I would hope to get that, or at least give that to you guys in some way eventually. But yeah, I think this was a fun night. And now let's move on to our second round pick, Trey Jones out of Duke. With the 41st overall pick. Yes, it's a point guard, but like you said, it's a signaling that Bryn might not be coming back. Exactly. Noah, give us your draft breakdown of Trey Jones.
Yeah, so Trey Jones won Defensive Player of the Year over at Duke, and I think he justifiably won that award. He's somebody who's going to get under your skin. He's a gritty defender. He's absolutely fearless. He's going to take on any assignment. He's great at the point of the attack. Really smart team defender, someone who makes calculated gambles. And then on the other end of the ball, he's a really good facilitator, and he may not have the best court vision or may be mm-hmm. the best passer or best shooter, but he knows how to run an offense. Had one of the best assist-to-turnover ratios in the nation last year. And his brother, Tyus Jones, has NBA pedigree, another guy who happened to lead the NBA and assist turnover ratio the last couple of seasons. So, you know, he comes from a good basketball family. His brother is clearly, you know, a solid basketball player. And, you know, you cannot be upset with this pick. He's a developing shooter. But at the end of the day, they did not draft a guy in the second round to be a starter. He is someone who could probably run a second unit offense. And this may be signaling the end of Bryn, the end of Marco, and even potentially the, you know, end of Patty down the line.
Yeah.
And you said, so let's wait on quotes. But yeah. we said... Like you said, Defensive Player of the Year in the ACC, as well as Player uh-huh. of the Year, as well as a finalist for the Wooden Award.
Yeah, the Wooden Award, yeah.
That's some credits right there, and that's something that shouldn't be ignored, especially being as a guy that's come from a high class program in Duke.
Yeah, and I think in a normal draft where there aren't so many point guards, because there are so many point guards in this draft, if you want to look at it from a traditional position perspective, there were so many point guards in this draft who rose up draft boards, and Trey Jones kind of was stagnated, and then because other people rose, that stagnation made him fall. Mm-hmm. In a normal draft without this many solid point guards, I think you would have seen him probably drafted at the end of the first round, just like his brother Tyus was. And so at 41 for a guy like Tyus Jones, I think that is just such another excellent value pick for the Spurs. Now, would I give it an A+? No, but I definitely would give it something like a B- or even a B or a B+, because it is good value, and you know it's hard to be upset with somebody there, especially a second rounder. Like, most of these guys don't end up playing. So if he ends up playing in the league, and I think he'll be someone who hangs around for a decade more, kind of like his brother seems to be, you know, on the track to do, you know, you can't be upset at all. You're going to have to be happy with that.
I mean, if you look at stuff like, man, Blossom Game is out of the league. So if you think about it, we had Blossom Game for a while, and somehow Quinn has already played probably 10 times more minutes than Blossom Game ever even touched on our court. So it's like, we seem to be finding more and more value in our second round picks. And that started with, Metu?
It started with Metu. Metu was drafted alongside Derek White. No, Lonnie Walker. Sorry, my apologies.
Oh, yeah, Lonnie.
So Blossom Game was drafted next to Derek White. Metu was drafted with Lonnie. And then Quindary was drafted with Keldon and Luka.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think when you're looking at those picks, you look at Blossom Game and you look at Metu, those are guys who they were hoping would be able to play in the NBA, maybe provide some upside. They weren't necessarily NBA ready players. And I think Trey Jones is an NBA ready player. He may not play immediately because the Spurs do have, you know, DeJounte, and they have Derek, and they have Patty still. But I think I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him in the rotation in the next couple of years.
And I was even saying that if you do have a player for godforsaken go down for a period of time, I think Trey Jones is going to be a great backup.
Exactly.
So say that you do have a guy like Quindary coming in, maybe starting as if that's needed. But you have a guy like Trey Jones who's going to be able to come off the bench as a substitute.
Yeah, and something that... Sorry, go ahead.
No, a substitute as an injury replacement, essentially.
And something that is pretty underrated, but Noah here talked about, is if Derek does end up starting, he was pretty much the floor general for our second unit. And with him starting, we're losing that. But Trey Jones can come in and, you know, maybe be the general that we need. Maybe be the one to kind of direct the flow of traffic in the second unit. Especially, you know, if we're moving on from Patty or if he's, you know, taking on less of a role and more of a mentor. It's like we need that. We would miss that if Derek started. And I think that he might be able to fill that void.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about, like, Derek could be starting next to DeJounte, who could have also Lonnie and Keldon in that lineup somehow, the likelihood of all those guys being in the lineup at the same time is so low. So if you think about having Trey Jones in there with Patty and then alongside someone maybe like Keldon, and then you have maybe Jakob or another big man in there, like Trey, as your second unit, I think that's a good second unit. And I think especially alongside other really good defenders, I don't think Patty stands out as such a sore thumb on the defensive end in that case when you have guys who are good or serviceable defenders around him. So, you know, Trey Jones may be someone who disappoints some fans because they're tired of seeing guards, but I think he brings a lot to the table and he can be a replacement for Forbes and Marco and, you know, maybe even Kandari. You know, we're not really sure what Kandari is yet.
I'll tell you what, one thing to look forward to is Patty was quoted as saying he hasn't even entered his prime yet. So we'll see how it goes. Wasn't it a few days ago?
Yeah, it was a few days ago.
That's so funny to me.
Funny tweet from Joey Wilkinson.
What do you say?
Pop really got fed up with watching the defense last season. So he Spurs took the best two defenders, one of the two best defenders in the draft.
Exactly. And I don't blame him. We were very poor on defense for a lot of the draft.
And I forgot who said it, but someone says that we are really going to jump from the bottom 10 defense in the league to top 10 defense.
I agree.
I think the Spurs definitely have the potential to be a much, much better defensive team. And if you see how the Magic made their team, and I'm not saying that's the way to build a team, but the Magic were a pretty formidable defensive squad, and I think the Spurs have a higher offensive ceiling. I think the Spurs could be right in the thick of playoff contention, and say they miss the playoffs.
It's not going to be
that's okay. You know, that's okay because this next year's draft in 2021 is even better than this 2020 draft was. In 2022, the double draft is going to be something to keep an eye on as well. So it's not the end of the world if you miss the playoffs. This is not an immediate gratification situation where you need to get back in the postseason right now to be like the Orlando Magic. And I know I gave them credit for being good on defensive end, but they're not a great team. And I think if you want to start off with the defense first mold and then figure out, you know, where your superstar comes from or where your engine comes from, that's not a bad way to build a team.
I think no matter what, though, the Spurs team is going to be competitive.
I think they will be competitive. As long as they don't bring back Marco and Bryn and play them heavy minutes, they should be much more competitive.
Exactly.
Much more competitive.
I agree.
And so let's talk about some other things real quick. We do know that Jakob, Drew Eubanks, and Quindary Weatherspoon all got the qualifying offer. So most likely, at least Drew and Quindary, I see both of those returning to the team. And Jakob, it looks like the Spurs are really one to retain him, especially with how they drafted. And I think that you're going to see Jakob return to this team unless he just gets a really god-awful, crazy offer from someone else that he will rather take.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to most likely see Jakob return to this team, especially with the way they drafted. Now, we did say that one of your favorite players, Noah, Killian Tilly, it went undrafted, and we are already seeing some undrafted players get signed. That's certainly a name that you would want to keep an eye on.
Definitely.
Are there any other undrafted players that you might want to keep an eye on?
I think Jonathan Givony had a really good list of players to keep an eye on that are undrafted. He listed names like Devon Dotson. Obviously, he's off the board. But someone like Nate Hinton, I'm not sure if he has been signed, but he's someone who I'd be really interested in. He's someone who is a really good rebounder for a wing. Interesting profile as a prospect. If you want to dive deeper into him another time, we definitely can. But, a few other names that I like. I like Najee Marshall. I like Lamine Janae. He was a guy who played in one of the lower Division I schools and a lower conference, but he was an absolute scorer. I mean, like 26 points per game, at the very least worth an undrafted free agent flyer. See what he can do against, you know, the G League or on a practice squad or something like that. And then Tress Tinkle is also interesting to me, but Killian Tilly would definitely be my top option. And I know he's had some injury concerns, but to me, he's a really well-rounded player.
And low maybe risk, he's high reward.
Not, low risk, high reward. Maybe he's not a, you know, a master of anything, and he's just, you know, a jack of all trades and a master of none, but he is really solid across the board. Mm-hmm. And injuries concerns notwithstanding, even if he had to play limited minutes and he was on a minutes restriction or something like that, if you're looking at a guy as an undrafted free agent, the likelihood he plays more than 20 minutes per game is pretty low. So I think in a scaled down role in limited minutes, he could be really effective.
I mean, he would be better than like Zeller.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah, to me, he's immediately better than Tyler Zeller.
And we've had a problem recently with signing underwhelming bigs to small contracts and just letting them rot on the bench, like Laverne, Zeller, Deadman.
He was
Deadman
okay was for a year.
He just had foul troubles.
He did, but he was also like one of the worst pick and roll defenders, which like mm-hmm. we've mentioned in the past is pretty much like the most used play in the NBA. Like that's why everybody knows what a pick and roll is, because they use it constantly. And if you're going to be an awful defender for that play, then you're going to get exposed and people attacked mm-hmm. him. So, you know, a decent rim protector, right? A good rebounder. But not like the best player. So, I do have to agree. Like, the Spurs have gone like after underwhelming big guys. And maybe you don't consider Dante Cunningham a big guy, but even him, he was like kind of underwhelming.
He had that one game against Nola and we still lost.
Yeah.
But he had like 27 points.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
That was wild. Yeah, he was like on fire randomly.
I liked his attitude when he played with us. One person who I never want to see back with the Spurs is Quincy Pondexter, because not only did he suck, he had a bad attitude after he left.
Really? I didn't know that. I didn't even notice that at all. Either. Yeah. Well, I mean, like,
made a few comments.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just let it be in the past, because I honestly don't know much about him, and he didn't play much, so he's not super relevant to me.
You know who I was disappointed that didn't really get a lot of run?
I don't want to hear it.
Oh, Killian Tilly just got signed. Memphis Grizzlies.
Dante Cunningham.
Oh, I thought you were about to say DeMar Carroll.
No. I hate that Dante Cunningham didn't get a lot of run. But
he wasn't that great of a player. Like, he's pretty much like a serviceable, like injury insurance kind of guy where he's going to play. Or he may play if you need someone to, like, get under the skin, like, as a defender. His defense was pretty solid, but I don't think he offers a whole lot. But, you know, hopefully the Spurs find now that Killian Tilly and a lot of the other guys who are the top undrafted free agents are gone, maybe they can find something, because it looks right now like the Memphis Grizzlies are having an absolute, like, filled day at the draft right now.
I know.
So who do you think want, like, give me some of your top teams who won this draft.
Well, for me, Tyrese Maxey going to the Sixers is a really excellent, excellent value pick. Could be a steal of the draft, similar to how Brandon Clark was last year, where, like, a lot of people who were draft heads valued him a ton and thought, you know, he's really high on my board, but NBA teams overlook him, and then he exceeds expectations. And I think he can do the same thing. I think he really could do the same thing for someone like Philadelphia. And so for me, Philadelphia is one of the teams that won the draft. I think they also got Isaiah Joe, who's another excellent shooter, someone who has a little bit of shooting and creation potential. So it's hard not to like what Philadelphia did. And they also were able to get rid of Josh Richardson and pick up Seth Curry.
Yeah.
So they've absolutely gone all in on that. Guess this idea of providing Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons floor spacers. And I don't think that's a bad idea, especially after last year they went with a supersized lineup that didn't really work come playoff time.
What about a loser? Because I have one loser in mind already.
Besides, well, give me your loser and I'll
Knicks.
Tell you.
Knicks.
Yeah.
I think they get a good prospect in Obi Toppin at, I want to say it was eight.
Eight. Hey, that's the same number as how many power forwards they have now. So it's like,
But yes, they have too many power forwards. I think they got a really good player in Toppin.
That's true.
But not really anyone else.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at their draft. So they got Obi at eight. And Obi, I think, is going to be a really solid offensive player. I don't think we're going to have to worry about him scoring. But much like Dwayne Dedman, he's an awful defender in the pick and roll, and he's really not that great of a defender in general. So I think you may struggle if you're the Knicks. Maybe you're bad again. Maybe get lucky. You're right back in the lottery. That's exactly what I expect to happen. They also drafted Leandro Bulmaro and then immediately traded him to the Timberwolves. So that's a dodged bullet for Bulmaro.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting Emmanuel Quickley, you know, rip Emmanuel Quickley. I liked him quite a bit out of Kentucky, and now he's headed to the Knicks. And then it looks like they also got Daniel Oturu, another guy who I was like, I think he's a good second-round value. But to be honest, if you're heading to the Knicks, I just don't think it's the best, like, most nurturing environment.
Yeah.
You know, especially for developing prospects. So I'm just not sold on anybody going there.
You know the biggest winner of this draft has to be?
Who?
Killian Hayes going to Detroit and not to New York.
Oh, exactly, man.
He did dodge a bullet. One pick away. And at least in Detroit, he might have some fun with Blake Griffin. Who knows? Maybe Blake Griffin has a comeback year, because he did look actually pretty good when he wasn't injured a couple seasons ago. And I say, you know, not injured. He's often not, or very not often injured. He's often injured is what I meant to say. So, you know, we'll see what he does there. But, you know, I agree with y'all with the winners and losers of this draft.
I can think of two people I wouldn't call losers, but I would call almost major reaches, and I think that they may have not sabotaged our season at all, but they didn't do that well in the draft.
Sure.
Are Bulls.
Bulls at 4 with Patrick Williams, okay.
And maybe not as much, but the Suns. That's a weird pick.
Jalen Smith.
And they should have taken Vassell, if we're being honest.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised they didn't take Vassell, but I'm also not surprised considering they drafted Cam Johnson last year out of North Carolina, the 5th-year senior, one of the oldest guys, someone who people were like, okay, well, he makes sense in the 20s, and then they go, we got to get him, and they, you know, they pick him at 11, and then they do kind of a similar thing where they draft Jalen Smith at 10.
They also drafted Bender a few years ago, too.
They did draft Bender and Marquise Chris very early as well, so they haven't been the best drafting team. I think they kind of got lucky with Devin Booker.
Yeah.
And then in terms of Patrick Williams to the Bulls, I think that was much too early. A guy who we both, you know, all three of us have discussed, he didn't start a single game in college, and that's not necessarily the worst thing, because someone who I compared him to in terms of, like, role coming out of school, like Marvin Williams was the second pick of his draft, didn't start a single game for North Carolina, but won a national championship with them, and then people were betting on his upside, and then people were also really disappointed when he wasn't immediately good, and I think fans might be kind of similarly disappointed with Patrick Williams. I don't think he's going to be a guy who's a day one contributor in any sort of meaningful way. You know, he's the second youngest prospect in this entire draft after Alexei Pokuševski. And, you know, Bulls fans, you have a bunch of assets, and Patrick Williams is yet another asset. But where does he get his minutes? Who does he play over? What is his role? Because to me, that's the most important thing. He's a 3-4 tweener. But he's not necessarily NBA ready. So it's a confusing pick to me. Maybe they make moves, but I just don't know. Yeah. I don't know exactly what that is. And I like him for his upside, but I don't necessarily love it for the Bulls.
Yeah, and before people get confused, because I think at least me and Ty did, I'm sure you had very high remarks about Patrick Williams. That's when we thought we could have gotten him at 11.
Yeah, I think he was a good value at 11. Actually a pretty good value. I mean, I had him 13th on my board, but if we're looking at it through my Spurs lenses, and the Spurs are trying to fill a position of need and meet that potential, you know, star in the making kind of mold of a player, I think Patrick Williams would have been a good option at 11, but at 4, it's very early, very, very early. And I hope that, you know, for anybody that I'm doubting on, I hope they prove me wrong, because I'm rooting for every single one of these guys. But at the end of the day, not every single player in this draft can be a star, even like a serviceable player. Like, people are bound to bust. People are bound to boom. So we'll just have to monitor it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think Okoro was a good deal at 5 for Cleveland, even good fit, because they already have a few guards. And then you still have Kevin Love and all that, but they needed someone at that wing position. And I think Okoro is going to be really good for them, at least, I would say.
I definitely think so. Isaac Okoro is another guy who's a really terrific defender, really tough, NBA-ready body, elite athleticism. And they're lacking defense for sure. They're definitely lacking defense. And they have guys who can shoot the ball. And they have a lot of guards or like lead initiators. So I think Isaac Okoro is a really nice pick for them.
And
so,
they're lacking – oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
They're also lacking good draft capital in the past couple of years. Like, I forgot his name. Who's the guy they drafted last year?
Darius Garland, which was kind of confusing considering they drafted Colin Sexton the year before. They're like almost identical in like height and weight and positions.
Not only that, I think it was in per. I can't exactly remember the advanced stat. He was like 4th from the bottom in the NBA overall.
And I'm not that surprised either, because rookies usually come in and they're awful. Like, even if they put up numbers, they hurt their team. Like, we saw Dennis Smith Jr. come in immediately in the Mavericks, averaging like 15 points per game or 4 or 5 assists or whatever. But like, the advanced metrics say he really hurt them. And that's not unusual for rookies. But I think if you're that team and you're grabbing yet another rookie, right? If you're getting another rookie, you don't want to continue to just add guards when you've put like a top four, top five pick into these other guards.
Yeah.
So I think having a wing like Isaac Okoro is a good fit for them. I really do. I think it's a really solid fit for them.
What about kind of the odd pick to me? Was it Okongwu at six to Atlanta? Knowing how, looking at their big man roster already with John Collins, Clint Capella.
Yeah, well, we were talking about that earlier, right? It looks like they're looking to move Capella, and it looks like they're at an impasse in contract talks with Collins. Now, that may be wrong. That's what I saw, I think, Sham's tweet, or maybe Kevin O'Connor. I can't remember exactly. But it looks like one of those two will be on the move, and they're looking at Okongwu to fill that void.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean, that makes sense. I think Okongwu could easily play next to a guy like Capella or a guy like John Collins. But if I'm being honest with you, I really like Okongwu over both of those guys. I think mm-hmm. he has definitely more shooting potential than someone like Capella does. I think he's a similar rim protector as Capella. And mm-hmm. then as far as John Collins goes, to me, he's very similar to Obi Toppin, where he's not a good defender, but he's a guy who can, you know, fill up the stat sheet, but not necessarily impact winning. So I think with Onyeka Okongwu, you kind of get the best of both worlds. So you can...
Yeah.
feasibly move on from both guys or one of them and still be fine.
And I think that's Onyeka what they're prepared there. For. I think with Okongwu, they say, well, we lose one and keep the other. We have Okongwu. It doesn't matter which. Or if we lose both, we're fine.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree there. I definitely agree.
All right. Let's talk to the last part of the segment, which is definitely the trades. And I don't think that a after the fact trade is not out the window. I think that's still possible.
I agree 100%, especially because I really feel like this team is trying to move on from LaMarcus as quick as they can.
And I forgot which one of you said it, that just because we already saw that the Clay talks, it really hurt the possible trades, but also just the short amount of time that they had. I think it was that said, Nick, where just the short amount of time was not helpful.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I was talking about how even the dreaded Kawhi trade, you know, these things, you're not just pick swapping is what I was saying. You are trading away cornerstone players for other cornerstone players or the chance at cornerstone players. You're gambling on stars, and you're gambling on literal stars to align for you and your team to pick what you want or to get who you want. You don't get these things decided when the moratorium lifts 48 hours before the draft. You know, there's a lot of planning that goes into it. Some trades take weeks, you know. It's just something that I wouldn't be shocked if we see LaMarcus traded in a week. I wouldn't be that shocked if we don't see him traded at all, but I feel like it's 60-40 in favor of him getting traded this season. Because I really feel like the Spurs want a return from him instead of just seeing him walk for nothing. Kind of same with DeMar, but... You know, DeMar adds a lot of leadership for the young guys, so, you know, we'll see what happens there. I just feel like the Spurs are going to do their darndest to get LaMarcus off this team for better or for worse.
Yeah, and like, when you're thinking of moving LaMarcus and moving DeMar, like, it's harder than it ever has been, and it's only going to continue to get harder to move these guys. Mm-hmm. They're obviously on expiring deals, so it's not like somebody's going to have to invest in them in the long term, but to make the money work, people are going to have to part with either major players or multiple assets, or a bad contract, which then if you're the Spurs, do you want that? So it's going to make it really complicated. And yeah. LaMarcus, and I've mentioned this in the past, he's coming off of a season-ending shoulder injury, and he's 35 years old, coming off maybe one of his worst seasons in recent memory, even though he did provide value as a three-point shooter stretching the floor like he never has before in his career. I mm-hmm. still think his value took a hit. And DeMar,
oh, for sure.
I think his value also takes a hit because you look at the Spurs. Yes, they were good in the bubble, and he was able to be that fourth quarter closer and defer to the guys and get people involved in the first three quarters of the game. But it hurts him because the Spurs were still a losing team at the end of the season. They missed the playoffs for the first time in 22 years, and it's easy to go, well, it must be DeMar's fault because he's their best player.
Yeah.
He's their second best player. And, you know, teams are going to use whatever they can to their advantage to gain leverage. And so when you look at it through those lenses, it's hard to move players. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes, the Spurs have not made a deal yet, but you cannot count out the possibility that they're still looking and that they have been on the phones, because there's no way there's this much smoke and these many rumors and, mm-hmm. you know, without there being some sort of substance to it, right?
100%.
There has to be some truth to it. Otherwise, why would reporters do that?
Exactly.
They don't have any incentive to do so.
Especially with the Spurs, because we're not, I mean, we're a team that, you know, it drew a little bit of media attention that we maybe have some mystical trade going on, but they have no reason to lie about that because we're generally not a big trading team. If, you know, you get what, who was talking about it?
Zach Lowe,
even Kevin O'Connor, everyone was talking about it. All these random reporters, oh, there's smoke, there's fire, you know, blah, blah, blah. Spurs are making a big move. I believe them. I still believe that they're trying to. I really think the Clay injury swept the rug out from literally everyone, including the Warriors.
Yeah.
I feel like the Warriors might be upset that it happened, not only because they lost Clay, but it kind of threw off their trading plans, because it seemed like they had trading plans with either us or Chicago. One of those was going to happen,
yeah,
from how it seemed.
And it's tough to make a trade now if you're the Warriors, because even if you get that LaMarcus Aldridge, or maybe you get Wendell Carter Jr., like people were rumoring, those guys aren't pushing you over the top.
Exactly.
If Clay is out. So why make that trade?
Exactly.
Why make that trade? Maybe wait, be patient, because you have you can be patient. You know, Steph is getting older, but he's not out of his prime yet.
Oh, yeah.
So you can be patient, see what the market has to offer in terms of free agency next season, mm-hmm. and see what people are willing to trade you during this season, even next year. So there's just no urgency into necessarily making a move right this moment.
And I'll tell you,
and losing Clay definitely changes your plans.
And one thing to keep a lookout for is, especially Noah was talking about the double draft in 2022, you are going to see so many teams this year and even possibly next year just try to unload their, you know, good players, decent players for 2022 specific draft picks, because is shaping up to be an insane draft.
Yeah.
So that's just something to look at.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the term double draft, just means that the NBA's one and done rule is essentially going to be through. So you're going to get mm-hmm. all these players from the high school class, the best players in that class, and you're going to get all the incoming freshmen, or all the freshmen who didn't meet that rule, you know, the previous year. So you're going to get two high school classes worth of talent combined into one draft. So the top of it is going to be stacked. Even if you're at the mm-hmm. bottom of the lottery, you should be in a very good position to make your team better.
Yeah. And honestly, from how it sounds in that draft, you'll be picking what would have been a first round pick this year, probably at 40 or 50, like easily at 40, maybe at 50. You don't know.
You could be. And I think 2021 class is another one you don't want to ignore, because 2021 class, and this is going to be controversial, but for me, the idea of tanking for someone like Cade Cunningham, I don't care. You do it because Cade Cunningham is a generational player. I've thankfully had the opportunity to see him play live in person multiple times. This kid is another one of those jumbo creators in the mold of like a Luka Šamanić or a LeBron James, where they can be the engine of their team without being a traditional point guard. He's a, you know, killer on offense. He's an absolute, you know, just dynamic scorer, playmaker. Yeah. And then on the other end, he's no slouch either.
Exactly.
And he's a generational talent. So if you're a team tanking and you're hoping to get him, I wouldn't blame you, because that is a guy who you absolutely want on your team.
Think Trevor Lawrence, if you want to put it in NFL terms.
Sure.
There's only one player that I would think, you know, in the NFL that it's really like acceptable to absolutely tank 0-16 for. And that's Trevor Lawrence. You know, Justin Fields isn't the safest bet. All these players aren't. Trevor Lawrence is. It looks like it's shaping up to be the same with Cade Cunningham. I mean, you know, it's kind of the reason that we saw the Mavericks. Like, I feel like they knew what they had and the Hawks didn't know, so they kind of traded it.
Yeah.
And the Mavs were just ahead of everybody. They knew something that we didn't, and they absolutely got a literal generational talent.
Yeah, and even if you don't get Cade Cunningham, there's Jalen Green, Brandon Boston, Jalen Johnson, Jonathan Kuminga, Evan Mobley, Zaire Williams, Usman Garuba, Scotty Barnes, Jalen Suggs, Greg Brown. I mean, a ton of talent. And if you don't get that first pick, you have plenty of options to choose from. And I that's the only reason why, if the Spurs end up handing the keys to the youth and they don't make the playoffs but still are competitive, that's a year of development, and you get to add possibly a centerpiece that can be the star that makes this team go.
Yes.
And then you have these seasoned pieces around them that are still young on that same timeline. And I think that could be something worth monitoring. You know, even if the Spurs are not good at, you know, playing their youth, that's not the end of the world.
For us, it's literally win-win. We either make the playoffs with most of our youth, with some vets, you know, going back and forth with some development, you know, getting the youth, confidence up by making the playoffs, or maybe we tank, maybe we don't tank, maybe we get back in the lottery, get a higher pick, but it doesn't matter. Because with this season and the bubble and everything, well, before the bubble, we saw that Pop kind of got a grasp of what was going to happen. So he said, screw it, let the youth go, let them go crazy.
And I think his hand was like kind of forced a little bit because he was stubborn all season. And I think that's what it was, being stubborn, right? There's no reason you continue to play Bryn and Marco and Rudy and all these other guys heavy minutes unless you're being stubborn. But I think also the young guys, while, you know, it may have hurt their development in some ways, in other ways, you know, it instilled patience, maybe a better work ethic. Not that any of them don't have a good work ethic. I think they're all gym rats who are really excited to get better, enthusiastic about improving aspects of their game.
Trust me, there's a rat problem in the Spurs training facility.
And, it's in their it's in their blood to work hard. I mean, they are just wired differently than a lot of other young guys. So I think even if we didn't see them get that opportunity in 2019, 2020, if that happens in 2020, 2021, where they do get that opportunity, I think they are going to not necessarily make the playoffs, but surprise a lot of the league with how good they actually are.
Yes. And I think a lot of that forced hand came from, came courtesy of Becky and Hardy.
That and the fact that, you had LaMarcus out, you had Trey Lyles out. And then, you know, I think Pop goes, well, what's the point of trying to force these veterans to carry us when I don't think they can? So he said, let's, you know, scale back Rudy a little bit. Let's eliminate Patty and Bryn, and let's see what these people who we've invested our first round picks in can do. And they, and I think they showed that they were better than a lot of people thought they were. So even though I will say, take their success with a grain of salt, they didn't always play starter against starter level players. They didn't always play the best player on the other team. And in the last Utah game, I think they could have won if they wanted to and played all of the team. But even Utah kind of had their second, third stringers in there. But even with that being said, they showed some tremendous progress.
Yes.
And I think that can only help their confidence.
And it showed, honestly, like to me, that I think we have a top five, fringe top three youth movement going ahead. Because if you think about it, a lot of people consider the Grizzlies as the best youth movement right now, maybe behind the Pelicans. We beat both of those teams at full strength, going full clip in the bubble when both teams were fighting for a playoff spot alongside us. That shows a lot about our players, because we were going against, quote unquote, which they're not wrong, but two of the top two or three youth movements in the league at full strength, and we beat both of them.
Yeah, and I think that is important to remember, but I also believe that at the end of the day, like if you have a Zion or you have a Luka or you have even a Trae Young, your franchise is just set up so much better for future success because you have your superstar, your future superstar. And while the Spurs don't have that guy, like I mentioned, they have really good complementary pieces. People who could even be, you know, that second, third star. But once they get that superstar, if they're able to find him through the draft or even free agency, I think this team could be really, really good. Really
and not good. Only that, like free agents, I'm sure, are taking notice of what we have. Like
you know,
they have to be. I think they are. I think some of them, like, I don't know. I feel like a team that could instantly make our team a contender or a person is literally just Jimmy Butler. I think that he could make almost any team a contender at this point. But if you put Jimmy Butler on this team with the team we have now, I think we would almost be better than that Miami team.
Yeah, I think, and actually that's really funny. I told that to Ty the other day.
Really?
I was like, you know, if you look at Miami, like before then, nobody really was like, they're this major free agent destination outside of LeBron coming with to team up with his friend Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. Like you don't really think of them necessarily as a free agent destination. And then you look at their roster coming, you know, into the season, they had Jimmy Butler. They had Bam Adebayo. They had Goran Dragic. They had, you know, the freshly drafted Tyler Hero. They had
Olenek.
Duncan Robinson. They had Kelly Olynyk. They had Myers Leonard. And it's not like a great roster at the outset, but then you had someone like Bam Adebayo. Now that Whiteside was shipped off, he had this opportunity and he absolutely flourished in a way that I don't think a lot of people saw, including our own coach who cut him from that Team USA squad. And then suddenly you add Jimmy Butler to the mix and everybody starts clicking and they're a really dangerous team. And I'm sure a lot of Miami fans who are really invested in the team and knew, you know, what they had, we're like, yeah, this team's going to be good this year. And, you know, kudos to them for knowing that. And I think for us, we can say that with the Spurs young core, there are similar correlations there. You know, they got guys, and even Kendrick Nunn for them, like a guy who was undrafted the year before, finally gets a chance, finishes second in rookie of the year voting. So there's just so many different factors that can go into a free agent's decision to join a team. And for Jimmy, a lot of it, I'm sure, was Dwayne Wade being his friend and hearing mm-hmm. all the, you know, love he got from, you know, yeah. the Heat. But I think that opportunity isn't out of the possibility, you know, out of the realm of possibility for the Spurs, because you look at what they have, yeah. solid young core, good complementary pieces, and they could be, you know, a superstar away in a year or two from being legitimate contenders.
Yeah, and not only that, we have what seems to be, you know, a lot of teams, they look at like, oh, well, we have Spo. We're good at coach right now. What happens after Spo? We know what happens after Pop. We have two insurance plans. We have Hardy and we have Hammond. And either of them can be a great head coach in today's league, and we are graced to having both.
And teams are interested in both of them too.
Exactly. They were.
Luckily, the Thunder, now every team in the NBA has their head coach, so we're not going to be losing any of our coaches this offseason, at least in like a head coach capacity. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's definitely insurance plans. And say even Ime Udoka wants to come back to the team, I'd be happy with it because yeah. I think he's another tremendously talented younger coach in the NBA. So there's just a lot of people who are able to study under Popovich, and I think that mm-hmm. will only bode well for them when it comes their time to be a head coach.
What do y'all think of do you think we'll find out what Pop's doing after the season
in terms of staying?
Yeah,
after, you know, the 2020-2021 season.
Yeah,
I think after that he'll only have one more year left, and every year has like that opt-out clause so that mm-hmm. he can control his future. And I think depending on how well they play this year, he mm-hmm. may stick around. I but I'm not sure, you know, because we're kind of at an impasse. We're in between a youth movement, like a full throttle youth movement, and like hanging on to DeMar and LaMarcus and making a playoff push or trying to.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what to think, but we may know depending on what way this season goes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and even above that, what worries me, and I don't know if I should be worried about it, but say Pop's like, I want to stay. Well, maybe we lose Becky, maybe we lose Hardy, blah, 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 this, that. What if he only stays like another 2 years and he could have left a year or two earlier and we could have kept one of our two great head coach, you know, head coach chances. And now maybe we're scraping for another head coach. Maybe we have to, you know, outsource. It's like a weird situation for the Spurs, and I'd rather hire from within, from a, you know, a certified, I don't know what you'd call
like
it.
Like a Popovich disciple?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be all that worried about it. I think when it comes time for Pop to be like, I'm done, I think he'll probably step away and play a role in the front office. You know, we saw that with Phil Jackson. We saw that with someone like Pat Riley. And, you know, Pat Riley didn't necessarily have the most successful ending to his coaching career in terms of, like, winning a championship, having playoff success. But he has transitioned into the front office as someone who has made an elite team through, you know, off season, through the draft, through free agency. And then he found his disciple. He found it.
Yeah.
It was Eric Spoelstra. So I think when the time comes, Pop will know when it's time to go.
It's just a rational fear,
you know,
for me.
But I get it. I understand it.
And, you know, Pop's already the GM. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much. Yeah. We know that when we say Pop in the front office, it's basically because he is the final say, has the final say on everything.
The only capital letter in PATFO is P. We'll say that.
Yeah. But so that's been our post-draft thoughts. It's
heck yeah.
Even though we were expecting more of chaos and a more wild night, I still think tonight was a really good night. We have a lot coming up with free agency starting on Friday. Again, we recorded this nearly right after the draft, so not all this might not be up to date come the morning, but this is probably the most accurate our thoughts are going to be. If you guys want more of this content, make sure to follow At The Line on Twitter, At The Line Pod. You can follow me at the Ty Yeager. Noah, where can they find you?
At @N_Magaro on Twitter. Go ahead and follow my YouTube page as well. Subscribe. I mean, it's just my name, Noah Magaro George. So you find that and you can find me there. I do a bunch of Spurs content there, and I will be doing draft content soon there. And lastly, go ahead and follow Pounding the Rock and look on the website as well and find my work there, because I'm doing a lot of work there as well.
Nick, where can they find you?
You can find me at Nick Yarbrough on Twitter, which is at @NICYARBRO. Or sometimes I stream on Twitch. Like, it's just gaming, but it's at, or it's twitch.tv/CA.
Devern your Twitch.
Yeah, CADAVERN. So it's Cadavern, which is like a weird name, but I kind of enjoy it. Okay, so yeah, that's pretty much all I use. So basically, at Nick Yarbrough, NICYARBRO.
And again, I'm also streaming a lot now on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/TheTyYeager. We're doing all sorts of stuff to kind of fill in for the podcast. Try to do live stuff. If you guys want to communicate with me the most, get my thoughts, get Noah's thoughts, get Nick's thoughts. They're always on. Make sure to go follow that and check us out whenever we are streaming. I will post notifications for that on Twitter. Make sure to ring the bell for all of us on Twitter, because we're putting out all the information we possibly can. Also, make sure to check out Spurs Zone on News 4 San Antonio as well. Guys, any last thoughts for tonight?
Be excited for the San Antonio Spurs' future. They did a really good job in the draft tonight. Devin Vassell is one of the top end possibilities that could have happened tonight, and it ended up happening. So definitely be excited for the future of the Spurs, because they may not be in a position to compete today for a championship, but they've been setting themselves up well to potentially compete in the future.
Well said. I agree with all of that.
All right, go Spurs, go. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya. You know, man.